When I was a boy, they took everything from me. The rich don't see us as people. To them, we're animals.
Both of us. We're broken.
If a man wishes to challenge the gods, he must become more than a man. He must become a beast.
Da, 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 da!
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world gone crazy.
Are you serious? Ladies and gentlemen,
it's showtime.
We're continuing the monkey marathon here on Ma'am, unintentionally. I'm Mad About Movies. Welcome back. It's Kent, joined by, as we've learned recently, monkey aficionado, Richard. What's up?
What's up, fellow monkheads? This is our season. We've got Godzilla times Kong. We've got Monkey Man. And we've got Planet of the Apes coming. So we did it.
Of all the things that we have to watch for the podcast, thousands of different movies that we've talked about, if there was ever a time where Hollywood was just every week cranking out a different monkey movie, it could be worse.
Yeah, it could be. There's
I'm not saying it's great, but it could be worse.
Yeah, it could be. You're right. You know, a couple years ago when everything had a lizard in it, that was weird. No. Yeah, I mean, this is at least this one's like.
I mean, when Rango
original and not when
Rango came out, though. I mean,
we all
lizards.
We know where we were.
All the rage.
Gecko heads.
Yeah, yeah, every kid was Rango for Halloween.
How we not had Rango and Despicable crossover? We'll never know, but we'll get there. How are you, man? We don't have Brian this week. Brian is, you know, he's lost to time. Brian is he's moving. And Brian's got a lot of stuff, you know? Those Funkos aren't going to move themselves. So no. He's packing like crazy and trying to get everything moved over. So we wish him well. And so
he spent three days on the Chewbacca shelf alone.
No, well,
moving just that.
And not like you think he got distracted looking at the different Chewbaccas. He didn't. He was efficient. He packed them efficiently. It's just that many Chewbaccas.
People tried to help him, but he was like, no, you're not allowed. You can't touch these.
Yeah, you can't touch
these. I have
some of these you could, the lower shelf maybe, but like you're not touching my upper shelf Chewies.
Yeah. Well, he will be back later this week in the VIP talking a little Mad Max as we get ready for Furiosa. So if you want our throwback episode on the original Mad Max and a little bit of Furiosa hype talk, become a VIP and get that this week, madaboutmoviespodcast.com/VIP. But we're here to discuss the movie of the week, which is monkey related. It's Monkey Man, I think written by, or at least directed by, starring Dev Patel.
Co-wrote the screenplay, directed and wrote the story himself and starred.
There you go.
And produced, I assume, if he did all that.
The three-headed monster that is Dev Patel. I mean, this guy, I mean, he might pop up in the Olympics here in a few months. I don't know. This guy can do everything, it seems.
He can. I'm going to talk about this a bit. But he's an actor that continues to, you know, sort of unfurl like a flower. There's more layers to him than he's not someone I would have expected to do this range of things when he was 21. Certainly not when he was a kid, you know, he's 18 or something doing Slumdog. And then, and after that, he's bouncing around. Like he was on like the Newsroom and there was a Chappie and there was, and then all of a sudden, you know, I think with some of the indie stuff he did with Hotel Mumbai and some of that, he became an actor with a real following and became someone that was, I think, had a real purpose to his career. And I think
what's the one he was in with? That's like the old people movie. You know what I'm talking about?
The best exotic Marigold Hotel, I would assume. Second best exotic Marigold Hotel. Yeah. Those randomly made like combined. Like,
I just can picture the trailer. I can't picture the name though. Yeah, that's the one.
Those made a ton of money, which is hilarious. $10 million budget on the first, it made 140. $10 million budget on the second, it made 86. Gotta love it. So he's someone. But I think this is now a new genre of movie, which is like unexpected action hero movie. We had it with Odenkirk a couple years ago, have it with this. You know, these guys are like, I'm just going to get in really, I'm a good actor. maybe a bit of a character actor. I'm going to get in really good shape and be John Wick. So who's next? That's our question we're going to try to answer before the end of this episode.
A few answers for that. Yeah, we'll get to that.
Goldblum?
Well, Carrot Top, but close.
He is already jacked. He is halfway there. You know? He and doesn't have all, to,
he's
like,
killing
go
people
Zepic
with props,
or anything.
Too.
Oh, that'd actually be kind of cool. Like an A24 Carrot Top horror movie could probably be
where he gets heckled way too much. Yeah. And he just turns.
You and I have done this bit before, but we're both pretty, I wouldn't say I'm a fan, but I'm glad Carrot Top exists.
My favorite
I'm
version
glad he's just there
is the A24 one where Danny Elfman's his pissed off dad.
Oh man. Okay. Stop talking, as Brian always says. We might have a great idea now. Yeah, I don't know if we can uncancel Elfman, but if we can,
oh, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
Pissed hopefully off not. Elfman. Yeah,
hopefully we can.
Yeah, disappointed Elfman.
Yeah, you're right. This has become a thing, and that's kind of where I wanted to start with you. I know we've talked John Wick, we talked Nobody, we've talked about all these. Where do you fall as of April 2024 on this kind of movie?
Kind of the mid-budget action movie, hyper-violent, hyper-stylized, all that. Is that what you mean? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'm still into it, but I'm now aware of not being into it in 18 months. Yeah, maybe, you know, where Endgame was hitting and stuff with the Marvel movies. This is cool. I'm here for this. I'm here to see the end of this story, but I'm also getting a little, I'm starting to, you know, tire of it a bit. So, like, I, you know, again, if Goldblum does one of these in five months or something, then I'll be all it's going to take is one of these that isn't very good, and I'm going to be out on the genre.
You're really trying to will this Goldblum one into existence. I like it. I can see it.
Yeah, trying to think who else would be good. Yeah, I don't know. Who's the guy that played Sheldon? He's got a lot of money.
Jim Parsons.
Yeah, Jim Parsons could maybe do one. Jim Parsons there taking names. I'm here to kick ass and say bazinga, and I'm all out of bazingas. You know, something like that.
Sign me up. Well, I ask because I felt the same way. I'm curious how long this is going to be around. I'm curious actually why Dev Patel chose this to be a directorial debut. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess what many would assume is kind of playing off a current trend. Because I think Dev Patel probably directorial-wise is going to do a lot of very diverse things. And this just strikes me as something very unique. Like, I don't think his next movie is going to be anything like this. Unless he makes Monkey Man 2, which, you know, could be in the cards, depending on how successful this one is. But it felt a little, you know, capitalize on the momentum of some of the other ones that people have liked.
I agree.
But what can he bring new to the table?
He's younger, which was interesting.
Right.
Right. A lot of times it's like older middle-aged dudes that are doing this. Because like even Keanu's like a 50-year-old dude.
Yeah. He seems to have a little more stakes in this one. But I'm wondering, like, as a director, if you're going to make one of these movies, you got to kind of blow people's minds. And that's mm-hmm. where I've fallen on John Wick is... since we've had four of them now is okay. Gosh, that one was incredible, but what more can they do with this? And to their credit, they've been able to kind of reinvent the whole thing each time and keep people coming back. So this one, I was curious. I was like, oh, well, what's he kind of got up his sleeve? What's he kind of got up his sleeve here? And I think this setting is really unique. So I think that differentiates this movie from those is that it's a very unique international setting, truly. I mean, this feels like a foreign film, you know, in a lot of ways. I don't think we see the underskirts of India quite this way before, especially from somebody who has such a fresh eye for it. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that was great. But at the same time, I found some of this to be derivative. And I know some of that was on purpose, though. Like, there are mm-hmm. certain elements, like, here that I'm like, okay, he has to be playing on the fact that this is like John. I mean, there's literally a line in the movie like, this is the same gun as John Wick, right? Mm-hmm. So I think there is a winking to the camera to a certain extent, but how much?
Yeah, it's that fine line between homage and kind of tired, you know, tropes.
Right.
And I, on the whole, I like this movie fine. So I'm not going to, I don't want to dunk on it too hard.
Oh, no, 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 no. Yeah. I'm not dunking on it. I'm just,
I'm wondering
where the line of, okay, let me touch on my notes, real quick.
Well, I'm not saying you are. I'm saying what I'm about to say might sound like I am, and I'm not, but it's that fine line between those things. And it's a movie that is a little lost, I think, in its tone, because it's like, there is that self-referential piece. There is that very self-awareness piece of where it fits within like the action movie canon, but then it's also like hyper serious and high stakes and all of that. Mm-hmm. And there's that's outside of the great direction of John Wick. There's a really like a tonal note that it hits that's like really unique and fits it really well. That I think this misses on a little bit, not to its like total failure, but to its detriment of rising to that level.
Yeah, yeah, I totally feel that. For example, the plot line of freeing these women from sex work, I mean, that's the Equalizer series. I mean, we've seen how many scenes of Denzel doing that. And so I was wondering, I was like, oh, if they're going to lean into this and he's just going to do his Equalizer, I see there. But then he kind of swerves away from that, which was, you know, the family, the mom dying, flashback kind of earlier in the movie, which, you know, the familial grudge, revenge, evening the score, whatever. I mean, we've seen that done before. Not to say that that's a bad thing here. Thought the scene where he befriends the dog was a straight nod to Wick. The sequence where they steal the purse, the beginning, and all the different places the purse gets handed off to, I thought was really uniquely done and edited pretty well. But I also
big bounce back year for Charlton, by the way. This and Kerr.
I've always thought that I was never going to see that guy again. And then he pops up in like five more things every few years. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan. I've always been a fan. But yeah, he does pop up in Kerr this season. It's always good. Yeah. When are we going to get the Chappie sequel or, you know, the A-Team 2?
I will say this movie is not perfect, but it is the first good thing to come from Chappie. With, you know what I mean? Like, it introduced Charlton and Dev, and, you know, they did this together. So that's cool. That's one positive thing.
Now. Yes. Yeah. That's a great, great point. So you're saying without Chappie, this movie wouldn't exist.
At least in its current form. And that's cool. You know, now we just need Hugh Jackman and Ninja to work together.
So I'm told, I don't know if you know more about this, that he shopped this to everyone, basically, and they all said no. And then Jordan Peele kind of rescued the production. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so, pretty much. I mean, he's a real kingmaker of a lot of different genres. It's funny, he's kind of done now, over the last 5 years, everything but saving comedy. You know, he's someone that seems like really interesting. I don't mean that at all as like a negative. As someone who comes from a comedy background, it's like he is now the mid-tier producer of like horror, thrillers, sort of epics, like everything. But, you know, he's not saying, hey, Keegan-Michael Key, I'll help you make your dream comedy movie. It's interesting.
So what happened was, he had finished the movie and Netflix had bought it, but then Netflix backed out because they were too scared about how Indian audiences would react to it. Because there is some political stuff in there. We don't need to get into it a ton, but I was surprised at the amount of not even satire, like straight political commentary there was in the movie. And so that was an interesting note. Yeah, they were scared to do it. And then Jordan Peele saw it and was like, oh, this is awesome. This needs to be in theaters. And so he got it in theaters and persuaded Universal to fork over the money to do that. Pretty awesome. I heard some buzz coming out about this at South by Southwest. That's becoming a bigger and better place to kind of make a name, especially if you aren't mainstream studio or anything like that. Yeah. You can really,
I think it's time of the year where that takes place really helps too.
And yeah, you can debut your movie there. And then the next 2 months, it feels like nothing is out. you know, Monkey Man goes and gains some buzz, mm-hmm. and then the next thing you know, it's in theaters and people are out there seeing it. You don't lose that momentum from that debut.
Whereas Sundance, you know, has a great track record as well, but it's like, and even Con to an extent, because of the type of movies that normally make headway there, it's then 6 months or 9 months until mm-hmm. they come out. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it doesn't really serve, at least in the moment, it doesn't, it definitely serves marketing, right? Because you can always say winner at Sundance or whatever, or purchase at Sundance for this, but it doesn't really serve the momentum like South by could, where it's like, okay, we can premiere this and then it can be out in theaters 6 weeks later and kind of leverage that vibe, at least among a certain set of people that are tuned into that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. What did you think of Dev's direction here?
Again, like we were talking about earlier, heavily influenced, not necessarily someone I think that's fully, nor should I expect it to, someone who's fully mastered what they want to do, but definitely someone I'm interested in the potential of what he could do next and across a lot of different genres. So yeah, I certainly, this didn't make me think, oh man, here we go, actor, director, and you know, he's just, there's not a lot of vision here. He just wanted to be the boss on set at all. I mean, there's definitely potential here, but it's definitely someone also that's like, again, not necessarily influenced, like, you know, something as like eye rolly as we thought, you know, Todd Phillips was with Joker, but definitely trying to make a certain type of movie that's of the moment. And I would like for him in the future, which is not a bad thing, by the way. But to take a step back in what he would make without thinking about that current influence at all. I'd love that for his next step.
I mean, he's worked for some great directors in his mm-hmm. career. So he's certainly gotten a great education on that front on all kinds of different types of movies. And he was somebody who I was excited to see as an actor, what he was going to be up to, and thought, you know, you get this guy in Marvel ASAP or something, you know, because I think he's got a lot left to give. But man, now I kind of want him to just chill and direct some stuff, but not put himself in everything, not direct himself. There is a little bit of a vanity to this. Like, you're directing yourself as this guy who's just destroying everybody. I want to do that. I want to direct the Kent Garrison movie where Kent Garrison just goes and wreck shop. I mean, that sounds great to me.
I think we all do. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. But it's just you just hyped out of your gourd on Mike and Ike's.
Yes.
Just killing. Just.
They discontinue the sour Mike and Ike's and I go on a rampage.
Yeah. A little bit lower stakes, but I think still
effective. I mean, if you know, you know. I mean.
I know it seems now I do worry about a bit because there will be something else. It's fine. But I do worry, like, in the grand scope of action movies, the kind of general thing is that they become aware of themselves. They iterate on that self-awareness. They make something really fun when they're lightly aware of it. And then they overdo it, right? Fast and Furious is a great example of this. Make some silly movies that are not self-aware, then become self-aware and kind of sentient as a tonal species, makes Fast Five, maybe a little bit of Fast Six, and then diminishing returns going forward, right? In terms of the quality and fun of those movies. Even something like The Expendables, you know? And it does seem, and then something new pops up, a new tone of action movies, either successfully or even lamely, appears, and then again it iterates, it becomes self-aware, it has its best version of that, like something like John Wick 3 maybe is like what a lot of people consider the best John Wick, and then it maybe is, and it is a bummer, this movie does sort of seem like the next step where the next version of the John Wick aesthetic is going to be lame. Like, this seems like the end of the, and I mean, maybe John Wick will be able to carry it on, but and now I'm so curious of what the next kind of type of action movie is, because this one, this has been the thing for the last 10 years. And now it seems when people are doing things that are this influenced, you have to wonder, okay, well, what's the next thing that's not influenced? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think the next one of these is next summer. It's Ballerina, the Ana de Armas, John Wick.
Okay.
One.
Yeah.
We know we have that. So, I mean, I'm sure there's going to be more between now and then that pop up. They always have and have. At least we have that to look forward to.
Yeah, that's Len Wiseman, too, which could be tough, you know?
Emerald Fennell. Screenplay. Interesting.
Yeah. That is interesting.
Could be good.
Could be cool.
Yeah. What was your favorite scene in the movie?
I did like the sort of momentum and chaos of that opening kind of snatching scene. I'm aligned with you there. I'm trying to think. Let me get to my notes here.
Yeah. One stands out for me was the bathroom fight.
Okay.
That was cool.
That's cool.
It kind of lost some momentum, but then when you feel the last act kind of coming on, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, let's do this. When he kind of finally shows up at the place to commit his act or whatever, I was like, oh, this is going to be good. Oh, I'm not sure it led up.
I did think it was fun when they, the dog carrying the gun, like that whole thing, anything with a dog gun on. And the axe guy was cool.
I'm not sure it met the expectation of that moment because it just, I don't know, for 90 minutes, you're kind of leading to this. I thought it was going to go just nuts, and it became very personal very quickly, which, like you said, this movie kind of leans further into the personal kind of stakes side of it rather than the action. And in that moment, I kind of wanted it to just go fully in on the action. Whereas, they kind of had to wrap this thing up. I don't know. I'm used to like a 30-minute fight sequence at the end of these, and it was more like,
you know what I thought? I agree with you. The one critique I wrote coming out of this, I'm looking at my notes now, was it did feel like there was a governor on this movie, a little bit of holding back of like, well, in the next one, we'll do this. Like, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It's building with the assumed sequels. I don't know if this will get that, you know, like it made its money back, but it's not like a crazy hit. You're right. Like that did feel tempered because they didn't want to like raise to maybe like the next, you know, the one that saves some fight momentum for the next. Because this isn't necessarily maybe the third act of like the overall thought plot. You know, maybe just this is the end of the first act. And that's how it felt to me.
Yeah.
Which is awesome, by the way, when it makes $200 million and you go, okay, cool. Well, now we have, but you know, when it makes 12, it's like, oh, maybe we should put that in there.
I could have done with less of the car chase. I thought that was kind of hastily edited together.
Yeah.
A little shaky. Oh, yes. Very. Yep. So maybe could have done that one over again. And more Subhita Dhulipala in my life, please, in general. She was great.
Yeah, she was great. She was great.
So need her more stuff. All right. I'm curious, though, I think the big question is, you know, time will tell where this kind of falls in the canon of these movies. Is this a John Wick or is this Atomic Blonde? You know, I
think
don't know.
Much I think, more the latter. I think it's a better movie than Atomic Blonde. That's a great one to bring up. That's exactly the movie I was thinking to compare it to. That's why they pay you the big bucks. That's a great one. But yeah, it's more that, I think. I don't think this will have crazy legs.
I think what's going to determine whether this movie stands the test of time is Dev Patel, I think, right? As a director. I mean, if his career falls off on either side, acting or directing, I think this movie can kind of maybe fall off. But if this feels like a Reservoir Dogs, maybe, of a career that is yet to kind of start, you know? You started off with a bang, like something super brash, crazy, get people to their jaws to drop a little bit, and then we'll see what you got after that. Maybe it's more jaw-dropping, but hopefully more Subhita. All right, let's grade out this one, though, before we hit weekly recommends for the week. Richard, how are you going to grade Monkey Man?
I'm going to grade it. This is a tough one to grade. There's a lot of factors that come into it, but I think during my proprietary algorithm, it is... I'm going to go with a B.
Yeah, I was going to go B plus.
Okay, nice.
Because it was rewatchable factors pretty high on it, I feel like.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, let's hit a weekly recommend before we get out of here.
Weekly recommends.
What you got for us this week?
Yeah, I'm going to recommend, actually, something I should have recommended a year or so ago, but I was just behind on it, you know, blame having a little kid, life, whatever. This is a recommend to our audience, but this is also a big time recommend to you, The Philosophy of Modern Song by Bob Dylan.
Nice.
The book. Yeah. He wrote a book about songwriting and stuff. It's cool. It's first of all, the Audible, or the audiobook. I shouldn't say Audible. The audiobook is free on Spotify. So if you're looking for
him doing it,
it's half and half. So
they only got it for half.
Well, it's the way it's set up is each song that he talks about, he writes this kind of piece of prose, which is very Bob Dylan-y. And it's like in the second person up to the like character in the song or the writer of the song. And he reads that. And it's like in this fuzzy studio. And he's like, you know, you thought you were the one, but you weren't the one. You thought, you know, all that kind of stuff. But it's cool. And then he wrote also with each one, like an actual like traditional music critic essay. It's really funny to read Bob Dylan, like write so like normally, and he's great at it. And he's really funny. And it's also weird to hear him talk about things like boomer culture and TikTok and stuff. Like he's very much more aware than I would have expected. I thought he probably lived in some kind of bubble, but those are narrated by just a bunch of different narrators. Can I give you a few of them to gauge your interest?
Yes.
Jeff Bridges, John Goodman, Steve Buscemi, Helen Mirren, Renee Zellweger, Sissy Spacek. Pretty good. Nice. I'm probably forgetting a couple, but it's awesome. So I highly recommend the audiobook. Both the Dylan parts and the non-Dylan parts are great. And the book's cool and has a bunch of cool visuals and stuff in it as well. But if you're interested in songwriting and the sort of math and the art of it, I think you can especially, but a lot of our listeners would love it as well. So that's my recommend. The Philosophy of Modern Song by Bob Dylan. Turns out, you know, he's a pretty good writer when he puts his mind to it.
Man, that is awesome. I did not know that. I cannot wait to read that. There's another one I'll recommend to you called Anatomy of a Song. That's a very similar. It takes different songs from popular music and kind of breaks them down in a similar way. But it's a great idea. I'm going to recommend a TV show that is awesome. I'm sure you're a fan, Richard. Wife and I been watching, catching up on, you know, our weekly Columbo.
Wow.
Greatness.
That's strong. So is she liking it?
Oh, she's loving it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She loves a good crime show, right?
Yeah. Was never exposed to it before.
And it is good. Yeah. It actually holds up better than a lot. I haven't binged it like you, but I've seen a few over the last 10 years or so, and they're kind of fun.
Really, yeah, really well written. Peter Falk is greatness. Great. The great thing about it is they show you the crime in the first scene,
mm-hmm.
so the audience knows who did it the whole time, and it's just
you
see Columbo try to figure it out, which is a great twist on those types of shows. But wife and I are big into the true crime stuff. You know, we watch a lot of it. It's good. It's fun. We just talk the whole way through it, but it's fun. It's our little, it's our reality. It's our HGTV, you know.
There you go. Nothing wrong with that. It's all about finding those things, you know, that are common. It's too bad we never got Peter Falk on like an SVU. Maybe we did and I wasn't aware of it, but they should have
had
him on like a modern, you know, NYPD Blue, stuff like that.
And they kept Columbo going though for,
they did,
like until like 2000.
I know. It did go a crazy amount of time.
So, yeah.
It's 1968. He played him from that character from this is like a Frasier run. 1968 to 2003.
Crazy.
In different, you know, there's movies and TV movies and all that.
I mean, it's greatness. So if you've never seen Columbo, get on it. It definitely holds up. That's for sure. All right, there you go. We're going to take a quick break and welcome in Brian and talk a little bit of Mad Max. So join us over there in the VIP. But until next week, we'll talk Alex Garland's Civil War. So see you this weekend. Wow.
Hey baby, I hear the blues are calling, tossed salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me yah-yah. Salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again.